Got it. Here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. Here we go. You write to us at MyNorthWest.com. You text as well at 98973. Very exciting. Let's go behind enemy lines. First, let's dive into the news. Wow, this guy, Tom.
The real deal, huh?
Coleman, first of all, thank you for putting us ahead of your daughter-in-law who's about to give birth to your grandchild.
No, wait a minute. Wait, hold.
Stop the music. Hold on. John. Whoa, 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 whoa.
John. Yes. John, that ain't happening, brother. That is not happening.
Okay.
You know, nature has to take its course.
Yes.
I'm not putting you, golf, Vikings, Seahawks, or anybody else before my granddaughter. Okay, so let's just get that straight.
Okay.
But she Craig,
we are on the air. We are on the air. I just didn't even
know
that.
I know we are on the air.
Greg Coleman putting us ahead of his granddaughter, everybody. That's a man that knows how to play the game of football and talk about the game of football. First of all, what will be the – okay, boy or girl, do you know already?
It's a girl. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
She's a big girl. She's already 8.5 pounds,
Holy
eight and a half pounds. And yeah, she's a big girl, long legged.
Mm-hmm.
And they have picked out a name.
Yes. What's
but
the name?
They have not sharing. They're not sharing,
not sharing
that yet.
Okay.
So when she comes, I will make sure that I text Jacob back and let you guys know.
Coleman, before we get to talk football, how many grandkids do you already have?
This will be number 8.
Okay. You have a favorite?
They all are. They all are. Whenever they call me Big Papa, I'm their favorite.
Oh, that's the name you've got, Big Papa.
One.
Big Papa,
yeah.
Right? That is great.
Yep.
By the way, just for anybody that hasn't experienced it, Tom's got two daughters. They don't have kids yet. Just real quickly, to be a grandparent, it's why is it that people have bumper stickers that say, ask me about my grandkids?
Because grandkids are God's gift to parents. Because everything that you went through as a parent, it comes back tenfold on your kids. So now they experience and come back and they say, you know what, Dad, I remember you talking about this. I remember you mentioning this, and now I understand. So, you know, it's a grandparent's responsibility to spoil the heck out of them and give them back to their parents.
And then send them home. But it must be such great joy. So listen, Big Papa there, let's talk football before the birth of the eighth grandchild. The fact that the Vikings have been struggling and Kirk Cousins is there, and a lot of people think good things are going to come from Kirk Cousins. You guys have lost to the Cincinnati Bengals, and you also lost to the Cardinals. And you have not, as of last thing I checked, Tom, were they 0-7 against the Seahawks?
I have not checked that. There's a stat that I don't even have. Is that right, Greg?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I mean, so what? You know, what do you want to do? I mean, do you want to broadcast it to the world?
Yeah.
You know, this Seahawk battle has almost turned into a division rivalry. I mean, it's almost like we're playing Seattle every year, every other year, a number of games out on the West Coast, a few here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just happens to be a great rivalry, and Seattle has the upper hand right now.
Yeah. Well, so I guess this leads us to the easy question. First off, if you lose this Sunday and go 0-3, is your season for all intents and purposes over?
Absolutely not. It is a long year. It's a long season because here's the caveat.
Okay.
The goal is to win your division. Even though we're in that division with Green Bay and Detroit and Chicago, you win the division, you're in the playoffs. Then anything can happen after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a deep hole. There's no question that going 0-3 would make this climb extremely difficult. But your season is not over. There's an added game. There's 17 games left, a lot of things can happen, as you well know.
So both of us have had these just crushing losses last weekend.
Are you talking about you and me, Tom, or the Vikings, the Seahawks? Okay.
That's true.
If you see the ratings, Coleman, you should have seen the ratings about a year ago. Talking about crushing defeat. Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
So, but, I mean, both the Seahawks and the Vikings should have won their games, and they lost in the most crushing way, I think. What is the mood in Minnesota right now?
It's still optimistic. It's disappointing,
really?
But
wow.
It's optimistic. Yeah, absolutely, because you played well enough to win. A couple of plays here, Cookie hangs on to the ball in Cincinnati. We go down and win. You know, we make I'm not going to say a chip shot field goal, but we make a field goal. We're 0-2. I mean, we're 2-0 instead of 0-2. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing about it. You know, a lot of people want to get on place kickers. I mean, that's all you guys do. They want to get on kickers and punters.
You know, guys.
All you guys do is stand around all day. I mean, hell, anybody could do it. Let me tell you something. If anybody could do it, everybody would be doing it. But you can take the best athlete on any team, line him up with 3 seconds left, and have him to make a chip shot field goal, I guarantee you 9 out of 10 would fail. As long as there's a human element in the game of sports, there will always be those times where you think, well, this is all this guy does. He makes X amount of dollars. We pay him good money to do that. You know what? It's human nature.
A couple years ago, I think
it was 19. 19- No, you darn right.
Right.
Turner's brother, okay?
Right.
And I'm not going to let you guys spit over my guys.
No, we're not. Listen. We understand failure. If you've ever heard the show, but let me ask you a couple of things of inside football questions. First of all, I've heard it said that the place kickers, they said, yeah, go ahead, call timeout. You're not freezing me out. I've been doing this since I was 8 years old. If you want to give me more time to collect my thoughts, fine. Go ahead and call timeout just before I kick it. Is that true? Do they really, you can't really freeze out an NFL kicker?
If a guy has a fragile, if he's fragile from a mental standpoint, that might have an effect on him. But here's what happens. Guys are smart enough that if a coach tries to freeze him in that last second, what do? They go ahead and kick the ball. So they gives him a free run of motion with a snap, a hold, or kick. It's almost like practice again. So they're smart enough to go ahead and go through with the kick. But if a guy's fragile, I mean, he's going to miss it regardless of whether he gets frozen by the opposing team or not.
Right. Okay. And then I got one more for him, Tom.
Sure.
Because I was a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and I had your football card.
Why? Why were you an Eagles fan?
Because I lived in Philadelphia, okay?
And
I enjoyed watching someone try to catch Fran Tarkenton and Alan Page and the rest of the gang. And also, I disliked you intensely because you were so fast that a couple of times the Eagles lined up incorrectly. And because of your speed, did they tell you you could keep the ball and run with it? Did they tell you that?
No, I'll give you a very quick story. My first game here, after being cut by Cleveland, coming to Minnesota, had punted 6 times in the 7th punt or the 5th or 6th punt. Bud comes up and says, hey, do anything, but don't get it blocked. I mean, it's 4th and 11. Mm-hmm. He hadn't said anything to me the whole game. So I'm going to be a coachable athlete and not get it blocked. So I look up, and Fred McNeil, my right punt, you know, tackle on the punt team, misses his block. I think the guy's gonna block it. I pull it down, and I take off around the right side, thinking that I'm going to get the first down, dive for it. They stretch the chains out, and I come up maybe 6 inches short. So I meander my way back over to the sideline. But going off the field, my defense, I got Jim Marshall. I got Alan Payne.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I got the guys, hey, man, we got your back. Don't worry about it. We got you. I get to the sideline, kind of standing by myself, and Bud Moses over. He said, hey, what happened? I said, well, Coach, you said do anything, but don't get it blocked. Uh-huh. And he looks at me with those pierced blue eyes. He said, well, the next time you run around here, you damn sure better make it. And so fear has been a great motivator during my career. And the times that I have run, I have made, I think I'm batting 1,000, a couple of passes. So to have that as a threat was an advantage for my team.
Oh, yeah.
So I was very cautious and very careful to use it. I don't have the free reign like Johnny Hecker does with the Rams. I mean, he's just phenomenal being a former high school quarterback.
Yeah. Tom, go
ahead. He's a local kid, too.
Yeah.
So, listen, the Seahawks secondary is a suspect, but after we gave up thousands of yards, it felt like last week, to Derrick Henry, I'm wondering, do you think that Minnesota's going to focus on Kirk Cousins' passing game or Dalvin Cook's running?
It's going to be a combination. This will be take what the defense gives you. You know, Cookie was off to a great start during the first half. Big gashes, you know, 15 yards here, 13 yards here, 8 yards here. When you can put a defense in second and eight, a third, you know, second and two, third and two, the advantage goes to the offense. So I think the young Kurt Kubiak, who is the offensive coordinator, is going to call a game very similar to what he did last week. And hopefully, we can make plays when we need to and not give up the big plays on defense like we did to Kyler Murray in the Cardinals last week.
Tom, one last question before we take Mr. Coleman through.
I just want to get your sense of so we had sort of off-season hassles with Russell Wilson. There's a lot of controversy. At least we can't tell if there was fire, but there was certainly a lot of smoke. What's your take on Russell Wilson right now? Do you think that he's most people are putting him in the Hall of Fame, but do you think that he is going to, you know, be effective against you guys, or do you think that maybe some of the bloom is off the rose?
I hope not. I hope he's not effective. But let me tell you something. All quarterbacks are divas, okay? They love the attention, and Russell is no different. All quarterbacks are divas. Okay,
so not Carson Wentz. Not Carson Wentz.
Well, no, he's a diva too. Okay, if you're not a diva, if you don't have a diva for a quarterback, then I wonder about that quarterback. But but again, I think Russ still has the ability to beat you. He's a smart quarterback, mobile, not as mobile as Kyler Murray, but he has the big arm and he has the smarts to still be one of the most effective quarterbacks. And without question, he is HOF material.
HOF for anybody out there is Hall of Fame, and Mr. Coleman's also in the Hall of Fame because he invented a thing called the coffin corner kick. Jacob, now tell Greg Coleman what a coffin corner kick is. Moving on. Here we go. We had to explain to him what it was. All right, you ready? Seahawks pull up. By the way, you at this point, you're already a proud papa again. For the eighth time, beautiful baby girl. God bless you and the family. And at this point, you're standing off to the side. You're handing out cigars. But in your right hand, Mr. Coleman, you've got yourself a frying pan. Seahawks are getting off the bus. You're allowed to hit one of those Seahawks over the head with a frying pan. You've been through this before. And you hit one of them. Now, don't forget, the reason you're knocking them slightly unconscious but still able to play is because you want to be able to change the outcome of the game. So as they step off, you've hit one of them over the head with a frying pan. You get on the back of a horse. I don't know if you know how... assuming you know how to ride a horse, and off you go. And as you're riding that horse, you then pull off to a certain spot where nobody can see you, and you tear the jersey of the Seahawk asunder, and you place him in a Vikings uniform. Who do you steal in order to change the outcome of the game? I ask you now, Hall of Famer Mr. Coleman.
Oh boy, I tell you what, can I have two?
Tom, is he allowed to have two? Yes or no?
Absolutely not.
Wow, gee whiz, Tom.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll hit Russ over the head without question because he is the straw that stirs that drink, not only on offense, but he's the leader in that locker room. He's the leader of that football team. As Russ goes, so does that entire football team goes.
Okay, so Russell goes, and then Kirk Cousin. Yeah, who's the second one, by the way?
I'm not telling since you didn't allow him to play. Hell, you think I'm just
going to
give that away?
Yeah, boy, everyone's sitting on the edge of their seat for that one. All right.
Hey, if we meet you in the playoffs, we'll put you on again, and then you'll have to tell us.
All right, I'll tell you what. What is your favorite charity?
It is the Man Up Club and the YMCA.
Okay, Man Up Club. I know that organization. I'll make a $500 donation in your name to the Man Up Club if you get the score correct. What will the score be?
27-23.
Jacob, write that
Vikings.
Down. Vikings. All right. All right, write that down. Put that aside. That always scares the hell out of me. Greg Coleman, thank you. You are always a pleasure, and God bless that family, and especially your daughter with an 8-pound, 50-ounce baby coming out of her.
John, thank you, guys.
All right.
Behave yourself. Do the best you can to take care of John. Will you?
All right, guys, shush. Get out of here. We got to go to commercial
every
break.
Day.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Tracy Taylor's got to look at traffic for us. Or is it too early for Tracy Taylor?
No, we can go.
Okay, that gives you more time. Okay. Wait, about any music? It's like Jacob talking about the know-it-all quiz game or something.
Explain the coffin kick again.
Yes. I should get a drop of me stuttering through. Mr. Coleman just makes me very nervous, I think.
Hey, what a nice guy.
Yes.
Really nice. How about him, like, not wanting to tell us that, you know, is he holding out stuff on us, Tom?
Company right. Secrets.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Here we go, Kill Mortgage. That's right, Laura Kill, everybody there at Kill Mortgage. Just waiting to hear from you. You're calling them. They're answering the phone. You're finding out about whether or not how much money you could save every single month because mortgage rates still historically low. Kill Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Give them a call today. Who knows? Put that money right in your pocket. Kill Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. 15 minutes. Who knows how much money you could end up saving. All right. You're listening to the Tom and Curley Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for texting as well. You can write to us to the State Roofing text line at 98973. Why are we the only ones that don't refer to this as the Carter Subaru Studios, Jacob? Why is that? Are we supposed to do that? I've never done that for 10 years. Has Carter Subaru ever complained? Jacob's not with us anymore.
Oh, are we talking about the quiz prize?
No, never mind. Moving on. The White House is pushing hard to get the $3.5 trillion of additional money that they don't have.
It's taking forever.
It is. Gosh, come on now. When can we turn into France? And we want to be able to provide all sorts of goodies to a whole bunch of people. And are we the only way we're going to be able to make this argument is to start to prove that certain people don't pay, quote unquote, their fair share. And this is an argument mm-hmm. that the White House has been making for quite some time. And this is Joe's way of sort of creating a whole new economy, as he talks about. The president comes, shovels out and reads from the teleprompter after he takes his mask off that he's going to fundamentally change the economy. And people are finally going to be able to, you know, build from the bottom up or whatever sort of nonsense that he likes to spiel out there. So the Washington Post has a piece on do the rich pay their fair share? And just trying to find out where the money's going to be coming from. I know they want to spend more money on the IRS to get IRS to get some of these cheats in there. What's the Washington Post piece, Tom? Does it look like the rich are paying their fair share?
It's your other favorite East Coast newspaper. It's the New York Times.
Ah, the Times, the old gray lady.
That talks about. So, yes. So here's what the Biden administration is trying to establish, that the rich don't pay their fair share of taxes. Mm-hmm. And the New York Times is very upfront about this. I mean, the writer, Jim Tankersley, that they've come up with, as they put it, an unconventional methodology. Taxes are based on the wages that you make, not the profits that you make from investments.
Yes.
And so if you take that, the traditional way of looking at that is just how much did the rich person make in wages as opposed to any kind of capital gains and investments mm-hmm. and all
yeah.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they average, if you look at the top 1,400 households, they average a tax rate of about 24%,
right.
which is higher than the average taxpayer, which is 14%. So In this particular case,
yeah.
they've decided, you know what, we're going to look at the wealthiest 400 households, people that their net worth ranges from $2.1 billion to $160 billion. So these are like the richest of the rich. This is like the 1% of the 1% of the 1%.
Is this income or wealth? Is this overall assets held?
This is net worth is what they call it.
Oh, okay, okay,
but
fine.
They say that they pay an effective federal income tax of just over 8%. Now, how do they get that number? They yeah. decided that if you're sitting, so the investment, you know this better than I do, but capital gains, you're sitting on an investment or property or stock or something, and then when you sell it,
mm-hmm.
you end up, you know, paying a capital gains tax on how, you know, whatever profit you happen
right.
to sell. But if you don't sell it, it doesn't count against you. So
sure.
there's not on an annual thing. In this particular case, he says, but you know, your wealth is increasing, even though you haven't cashed in yet, it is increasing. So we're going to start counting that increase
mm-hmm.
in your investments, in effect,
uh-huh.
As part of your income. And that's why you guys, you rich of the rich, don't pay your fair share. It's only 8%, which is, you know, half of what the average American pays. So with that calculation, that's how they're justifying this. That's how they're going to hopefully pay for part of this $3.5 trillion. And that's not going to happen politically, but that's what their argument is. And so this is how they're trying to establish that, indeed, the middle class is going to benefit because we're hitting the highest money earners, people that are worth over $2 billion, up to $160 billion.
Right. So if you are making, say, $300,000 or $400,000 a year, and which is about, I think it's about $195,000 average CEO salary, and then you're also receiving bonuses and stuff as far as stocks, but you don't realize that. You just take those stocks and you put them in a suitcase, you put them under the bed. What is the value of those stocks right now?
So the value of those stocks is increasing, but it's not going to get cashed in. It's like if I put a, you know, I put $10 in the bank, you get the, the, it accrues, but until I take it out, it doesn't, you know. Yeah.
So, anyway. So the value is what the value is at the market as you, you mark the market of the, where the stock is. But can you use it? Can you buy anything with it?
Can you do anything with it? You cash it out.
Right. And then at that point, they take the second bite out of the apple, right?
That's right.
So in order to try to say that the rich are not paying their fair share, they include these assets that have not been realized yet.
Which is normally not done, but it is a way to get at how rich the rich are. The rich are getting richer because they have these investments.
Jeff Bezos tried to liquidate all of his money, which is mostly in stocks. If he liquidated and he was selling it, do you think he would be selling it at the same level today that he would be selling it tomorrow, knowing that he's liquidating? Would the stock go up or down in value?
I'm not quite sure I understand the
Jeff
proposal.
Bezos, let's say he has $100 million worth of stock, right?
Yes.
And now we know he's liquidating, right? We know he's liquidating, and when he's liquidating, the value of the stock is going down. So what happens is
Because he's quote-unquote selling.
He is selling. For whatever reason he is selling, let's assume that the government's going to come along. It's going to force them to sell. As they force them to sell, the price goes down because they know you have to sell. It's like a business going out of business. Liquidation, everything must go. You're expecting 20%, 60% off. So as you go to realize the gain, it's the value is coming down. Here are the big numbers. Just imagine a church, everybody, and there's 100 pews in the church. And the government comes along with its basket. And it says, we need to collect enough money to pay for all the bills for next year. And they take the basket and they begin handing it down. So from the front of the church to the back of the church, they go to the first 10 pews. And at that point, they have 70% of everything they need. And then they get to the next 10 pews. And by about that time, they have every dollar. In 2020, 62% of Americans paid no federal income tax. The number's normally around 43, 44. It was Mitt Romney that got in trouble and said, well, 47% of people aren't paying anything, right? So it was the highest ever. It was 2020. That's because the government did something it should have never done, which locked down the economy. But to say that the rich don't pay their fair share is the way to separate and make the rich feel like they make the poor or the middle class feel like, yeah, go get them. Don't tax me. Tax the man behind the tree. So nice try. So the New York Times pointed out that the White House is concocting this additional 8% thing. But really, those assets are not realized.
It's a legitimate way to look at it. You can look at it different ways. They acknowledge, though, this is not how normally economists assess taxes.
Right. Right. You know. It's not normal because it's not done, because in order to make this argument, you're going to have to do things differently. So we'll see. I'm just assuming that the Republicans can stand up and fight this, although they don't seem to be doing much as far as putting a stop to these handouts. By the way, if you make $100,000, you'll like this. If you make $100,000 and you have three children, 1-7, 1-4, and 1-2, the government will send you $10,200. And not at the end of the year. They'll send you that monthly. So you'll be getting a check for a little less than $1,000, and you're making $100,000. Joe Biden will wake up and send you almost $1,000 a month.
Okay, well, Republicans are giving you $6,000 out of that $10,000. It's not like it's $10,000 or zero. Republicans are offering 6,000. Democrats are offering 10,000.
6,000, so hopefully, and it's and I assume it's tied to work. It's going to be coming at the end of the year as a tax, right? Yeah. Okay.
No, as of this point, it's not. It's meant to help out the middle class with kids.
Why?
Three kids. And by the way, 100,000, it's not an individual. It could be the household. So if the mom and dad are working, they're both making 50 grand, which is not, you know, rich by any means. Yeah, they would get credit for their kids.
I see. Okay. All right. Don't forget, know-it-all quiz coming up. The theme, they all have themes. The theme is going to be what Felix talked about yesterday with D.B. Cooper. So D.B. Cooper is the theme, and it's the answers are all buried right inside his fascinating report, even though the anniversary of D.B. Cooper's 50th year of jumping out of an airplane, the only person that's ever been able to hijack an airplane and get $200,000 cash. It's coming up, Tom, Thanksgiving.
The day before Thanksgiving, yes.
Yeah, right before Thanksgiving. But Felix got a jump on all the other Northwest historians and was able to share with us a spellbinding story. So I was able to capture a lot of sort of the high points of that. That's going to be on the Know-It-All quiz. You can text us and send us something interesting about yourself, something that piques the interest of a – how old are you, Jacob? 25?
28. 23?
25 years old. something about – something that would make Jacob go, oh, that's interesting. I kind of like that. So sort of throw it down the middle, kind of as something a Gen Xer would find to be interesting, and text that to 98973, 98973. If you want to play the Know-It-All quiz and you win yourself fabulous prizes, which include what, Jacob? What's a fabulous prize that you can possibly
Big 12-man flag. Number 12 flag.
12 flag. Big flag. Got it. Thanks, Tom.
I love that.
Chris, open my computer again so I can talk, Jacob, with various sounds again. Yes, it is. It can be for anything. It'd be a dozen eggs, anything,
exactly.
Right?
Just 12. Your 12th birthday.
Sure, sure. Maybe if your street number is 12.
The 12th grandchild.
Absolutely, Tom. The imagination runs wild. 12 inches and a foot. Could be you could use it as a measuring device. A whole bunch of different things. Yes,
anytime you're watching Sesame Street and the number of the day is 12, you could bring the flag out.
That's not a joke. That's not funny. Jacob, that's not even funny. All right. I don't know why. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I sent Jacob a picture of myself. I never make it in the paper, but I made it in the paper down in Sonoma when I did an auction for the Sonoma County Barrel Wine. They raise money for the local school. They bring a bunch of folks in from all over the country. Sonoma and Napa are constantly in competition with one another to be able to say who's got the best wine. And Napa's got its audience, and Sonoma has its audience. And it's very strange that people are like, oh, I'm a Napa guy. I like Napa wines. It's like, really? I mean, there's really the okay, if you think you can tell the difference between the two. But they are distinct in the fact that Sonoma sort of sees itself as more of a earthy, you know, we're here to produce wine. We're here for, you know, regular folk. Napa is the highfalutin kind of thing. I don't know if that's the clear distinction, but that's sort of the way some people see the two different wine areas.
Well, then why were you in Sonoma?
I do Sonoma and Napa, but you notice okay. I was wearing cowboy boots. My friend Dana, who runs the organization, she said, you know, we almost didn't hire you because we saw you wearing shiny shoes. I said, you know, if you hire me, I can get other shoes. So I went to the antique store that's in Clallam on the way to Ellensburg, and I bought a pair of cowboy boots that I kind of like to have my eye on them, and I was really proud of them and had never worn them before. Of course, they're worn by somebody else. And then when Dana got up on stage, I looked at her cowboy boots and I looked at mine. They were exactly the same. I had bought a pair of women's shoes.
That happens to you a lot. Women's jackets.
Women's shoes. Oh, the robe I bought at Nordstrom, and I walked all around Nordstrom thinking I looked so good. And the guy's like, that does come in a men's, you know. But yeah, I got women's cowboy boots.
Well, the reason you were worthy of press attention was that the wine charity event that you auctioned at was the first live auction in a couple of years, obviously, pre-pandemic. And so that's why they described the auctioneer, John Curley, was energetic and bidders were really responding and seemed excited to contribute. So congratulations, John.
And they always take a picture of me. I look like I'm being anally electrocuted, like those minks that are raised for fur. And I always say to the photographer, can you get a shot of me where I don't look like something horrible is happening to my internal organs? And that photo.
I love those action shots. Those really? Look so good. Yes.
Yeah.
Tom loves mink.
Look at my Jacob, look at my face. I mean, none of my sponsors would appreciate that.
Right? You do look very focused.
Hey, John, the auction was in Windsor. My brother lives in Windsor. Too bad you guys couldn't have met.
Oh, I like Windsor, Tom. Yeah, that was out at, where was that? Oh, I don't remember which. Gosh,
La Crema Estate.
Yes, La Crema,
at
right.
Sara Lee's
by Barbara Vanke. Yes, La Crema, that's right.